Yeah, okay. Yeah, so last week we started discussing the introduction to the Tanakh, the Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. So we said there are 24 books, so on page number one, actually page 12, but page number one for us, we'll just go through it because you wanted to know, we might as well go through what are the 24 books, and on the next page we'll give you the author. So we all know the five books of Moses, that's Bereishis, Genesis, right over here at the front. Right here. Bereishis, Genesis, Shmos, Exodus, Vayikra, Leviticus, Bamidbar, Numbers, and Dvarim, Deuteronomy. That's the Torah.
So why the translation isn't has nothing to do with the name?
Oh, good question. I'll get to that in a second.
I know the isn't these named for the first word of their first
No, it's more than that. It has to, it's a good question. I got to, this one. I'm going to read through the books, and I'll come back to that. Then the Nevi'im, Rishon, there are eight. So the five books of Torah, there are eight prophets. So the first four are from the earlier prophets. That's Yoshua, Shoftim, then Samuel. One and two are really one book. You know, we just have a one and two, but it's all the same. And Malachim and the book of the kings. That's, and then the Nevi'im Achronim, the later prophets. That's the last four. You have Isaiah, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, Yechezkel, and then Treyasar is the 12 books, and they give you the whole list of those, all the different prophets of the 12 books. That's considered one book. Even it's 12 different small little prophets, the 12 minor prophets, but it's all considered, it's the eighth book of the later prophets. And then the last page, Ksuvim, or the last paragraph, 11, there are 11 Ksuvim, so that's Tehillim, Psalms, Mishle, Iyov, Job, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, Divrei Hayamim, the Book of Chronicles, and you have the five Megillahs we read at different times, Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, Rus, that we read on Shavuos, Eicha, on the saddest day of the year, Tisha B'Av, and then we have Kehelas, and we have Esther, and Esther on Purim. So those are, the breakup is 5, 8, and 11. That gives us 24. Five books of Torah, the eight books of Nevi'im, and the 11 books of writings. So just getting back to the question, so why? Where do we get these names from? It's like each one different name. So Sefer Bereishis is known as either the book of creation, for obvious reasons, the creation of the world. Then we have Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Imenu. And others say also it's known as Sefer HaYashar, the book of being straight, being a yosher, being a mensch. Go spend a day with Avram Avinu and Sarah, Yitzchak, Yaakov, learn how to become a good person. That's what the whole book of Bereishis, before the Torah was given, how to have integrity, honesty, how to live, you know, how to live a life. That's Sefer Bereishis. And that's why, in fact, that's what we have. In fact, that's the essence. We're going to read in this week's parasha, the beginning of parasha's Vayera. It begins with the story of Abraham recovering from, he just had a circumcision at 99, 100, and now he's recovering from his circumcision. And God sees he's having more pain from not having to entertain guests than he is from the pain of the circumcision. So God sends three angels dressed up as people, and we watch Abraham and Sarah in action. They're just unbelievable, running around, bringing out the meat, the potatoes, the whole works. So we see the point of this story isn't for the angels, they don't eat. The point of the story is for Abraham and Sarah, that Abraham had a tremendous desire to do a good deed, and God's just giving him an opportunity. If not here, he'd do it somewhere else. So we see the whole essence of chesed is that's the difference between what we call tzedakah, loosely defined as charity, versus acts of loving kindness. That, in number one, it's broader. In three ways, the Gemara says it's broader. That chesed applies to the living and the dead. Tzedakah, charity, can only be done, acts of loving kindness you can do to the living and the dead. Burials, is the classic example. But charity can only be done to the living. Charity can only be done to the poor. Acts of loving kindness you could be giving to millionaires. It doesn't make a difference how much money they have. You could do acts of loving kindness for them. They might need it even more. And thirdly, charity is done through money. Acts of loving kindness is done through bodily exertion, you're actually involving. So besides, the scope is much bigger, but there's a qualitative difference between them. That what happens when we usually give charity? Either someone comes to our door, someone comes to our work, we get an email, we get a phone call, and it's a good charity, could you help me out? Or I'm walking down the street, a beggar comes to me and says, do you have any change, do you have any money, etc. So usually when they give charity, it comes from an external support. If I wasn't necessarily thinking of doing it, but since I'm a good person and someone needs my help, so okay, if it's, I assume it's a good cause, and if I don't think it's a good cause, I won't give. But if it's the right situation, you'll give. So, but charity comes from an external source. Chesed is just the opposite. Is Avram has a desire to do a good deed. So it's just the question is, he has to do it, whether it's going to be on me, Brian, Ira, whoever it's going to be, doesn't make a difference. He'll find the opportunity. So that's what Bereishis is all about. It's the book of Yashris, being a mensch. Yep. And then Shmos, that's the rabbis call it the book of Golus v'Geula. It's known as the book of exile and redemption. For obvious reasons, we go into exile in Egypt, and then we get to Torah at Mount Sinai, and we get to sanctuary. That's the book of Shmos. Vayikra Leviticus, that's known as the book of the laws about the priests, the Kohanim, and because many of the book deals with karbanos, sacrifices, as well as laws for the priest. Bamidbar is the census, is the counting. It's known as the book of Numbers because of the census, that they did the counting in the beginning of Numbers. They counted how many Jews, and at the end. And why do we have two countings? Because one counting was for the Jews that... For the Jews in the Midbar, but that would be one. The Jews in the desert was a more miraculous type of occurrence. The food from heaven, the water from Miriam. And the second one was they're about to enter the land of Israel. That's going to be a more natural way. As Yahushua told the Jewish people, you know what? No more food from heaven. You know how you're going to get food? You're going to have to start planting trees, working the land. He said, wow, what? What a miracle. You mean if we plant a tree, a 50-foot tree is going to grow, food's going to come out of the ground? That's amazing. What a miracle. So as Nachmanides points out, is what difference will we call nature, what we call miraculous? If it happens all the time, we call it nature, natural. If it happens once in a while, we call it miraculous. But as our rabbis tell us, it's a greater miracle when a child is born than it is to resurrect the dead. Yet if you try to put headlines on the paper, you're trying to sell papers saying child born today is really not going to work. But if you say, you know what, I just resurrected the dead, that's going to get more, sell more papers. But in terms of miraculous, at least the body's there, all you have to do is resurrect it, as opposed to a child from a little tipa, a little drop, and the whole process of how someone's born. So it just is, what we call nature, we call miraculous, has a lot to do with what the society, so that's what the Jews in the Midbar, it's normal for food to fall from heaven. We expect it. But when you go into Eretz Yisrael, they weren't used to it. They have to actually work for a living. You had a question.
Well, we did. The world tried to recognize the 7th billionth person. This was counting all over the world. This girl, that girl, this child, that child.
Yeah.
Right? So they were it did sell papers this time, a child being born.
Okay, yeah, so that's... Okay, that was a special case, right? But that was just an example. The point being is that people aren't going to know. You know, people don't pay attention when even forget selling papers. You know, you say, "Oh, someone's born." You give a mazel tov. You don't say, "Wow, you're." You know, maybe sometimes if you're lucky, you ask, "The baby's healthy? Is the mother healthy?" Because in Jewish law, we consider it a dangerous. The woman, the mother, is considered someone who's in a life-threatening thing. Even, you know, today with modern technology, but back, you know, whether a couple hundred years ago, you know, there's so many more deaths both with the child and the mother. Today with modern technology, we take it for granted, but we take it as a very serious thing in terms of they have a status of a sick person whose life is in danger, and hence many things don't apply to a woman who's giving birth right after birth until, you know, until she gets back the strength. And certainly for the child who's just born. All right, so that's what they point out here. And then that's the census. And Devarim, Mishneh Torah, that's a repeat, a summary of the first four books of Moses, albeit it's probably a very bad rerun. You've probably seen reruns, Seinfeld, other shows. Usually then the same as the first time. Hopefully you haven't seen them in a while, so therefore you forget, so you get to laugh again. But how come if Devarim is a rerun, it's a summary, how come we find many new commandments in the book of Deuteronomy that we don't have in the rest of the Torah? Benching, Birkas HaMazon, we find new blessings of the Torah. Well, if it's a rerun, how come we have new? So that's what the Ramban, Nachmanides, points out. The book of Deuteronomy was written for the generation that was entering the land of Israel and after that. In other words, because now they had to have a quote-unquote normal existence, so they had to know how to function in a regular society. So the first four books, that was written for the Jews in the Midbar who lived through miracles. Now this is a book for the people now who are about to enter the land of Israel, and we have to appoint a king, we have to work the land, we have to go in a more a natural way. So those are the five, so that's the five, the eight, and the 11. And we pointed out the difference. The first five are directly from Moshe. The middle eight are the prophets get there, they're in a deep sleep, they're in a dream, and they get their prophecy, but it's not the word for word. That's why any two prophets who give the same prophecy, we know one's lying, because no one sees the same thing. If you give it the exact same way, you're copying someone else's prophecy. And the last book, the book of Ksuvim, that's just on a little lower level of prophecy. They call it divine inspiration. And then,
how does the Gemara relate to these 20 books?
In what sense?
It's a different set of books.
The Gemara is much later, much, much later.
In terms of time, yeah. In fact, the Gemara is quoting this. This is much later. This is we have the biblical law. We have the, this is during the time of Hanukkah time. You know, that's when the oral law had the explosion. So it's much later. In fact, that's I'm telling you right here. If you turn to the next page, it quotes where it's called Bava Basra, which is the name of one of the tractites, which literally is the last gate. It's Bava. It's the second page. It says Mikasav Chavdal, who wrote the 24 books of Tanakh. So it comes from Bava, which means Bava Basra, means the last gate. It's the name of the tractite, and it tells you what page 14b and 15a. So that's what the Talmud tells us, what the name of the books are and who wrote them. So that's what we'll go through right now. The Chamisha Chum Shei Torah, ever got the top over here? The five books of Moses, that was written by Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu with Pi HaGvura, right here. Moshe Rabbeinu, you have a Moshe Rabbeinu from God, that's the first. Yoshua, who wrote the book of Joshua? So you look right next to it, right? Yoshua. And it says, Vishlimu Eliezer HaKo, and then Eliezer HaKohen, Aaron's son, and Pinchas finished the book. They finished, I guess Yoshua died, and then someone else finished the book. But basically, Yoshua wrote Joshua.
The high priest finished it for him?
Yeah, Eliezer HaKohen and Pinchas, the Kohanim, yeah. Who wrote Shoftim?
That's Judges.
Yeah, who wrote Judges? Look to the left.
Samuel
wrote Judges. Then Shmuel, who wrote Samuel?
Shmuel,
right. Who wrote Melachim, the book of the kings?
Yirmiyahu.
Who's that? Jeremiah,
yeah. Okay. Who wrote Yeshayahu, Isaiah?
Chizkiyahu.
His scribe.
Yeah, no, Chizkiyahu was the king. Chizkiyahu was the king of during that time.
But it says Midivrei Yeshua.
Yeah, it says he wrote it, but Midivrei Yeshayahu. Yeah. Yeshayahu basically told them that he wrote it. He actually wrote it, but it came from what Yeshayahu told them. That's what it says, with the help of Yeshayahu. Then who wrote Yechezkel? Who wrote Yirmiyahu? Jeremiah wrote Jeremiah. Who wrote Yechezkel?
Anshei
Knesset.
That's
Ezekiel. Ezekiel. Who wrote Ezekiel? The Anshei Knesset, the rabbis of the Great Assembly, they wrote Yechezkel.
This guy's going to be right. These guys did not necessarily have the ability to write.
Who didn't?
The ones who didn't write their own
stuff. It's not that they didn't have, either they didn't have the ability or, they didn't, they weren't.
There was so much.
Yeah.
They had the prophecy, they didn't write it down.
Right. And Treyasar is the 12 books that we said with all the different minor prophets that was also written by the rabbis in a great assembly. So that's the end of the book of prophets. Then we move to the book of Ksuvim, is the last thing, the writings. So Tehillim, who wrote Tehillim?
David.
Right, King David.
Psalms?
Yeah, Psalms, right, King David, he wrote it. Who wrote Mishle?
Proverbs?
Solomon.
Yeah, right. So it says Chizkiyahu wrote it from Solomon. Basically Solomon, right? Solomon wrote it in Chizkiyahu. Who wrote Eov? Job?
Moshe.
I know they say he lived during his time. Daniel. Who wrote
Moshe?
Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah.
So this stuff happened in the desert.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Eov lived for a long time. It's a question whether Eov even existed or not, but we'll get to separate discussion. But he lived, obviously, he was one of the advisors. We have, there's a medrash that tells us that he had three advisors to Paro. One was Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law, not yet, but his future father-in-law. One was Eov, Job, and one was Bilam. The wicked Bilam. So what happened?
The Gentile prophet.
Right. So what happened was, so Paro said, what should we do with this Jewish people? So Bilam said, kill the Jews. Because he was a big anti-Semite. Yisro wanted no part of it. He said, I can't be part of this. So they're going to kill him. So he ran away and became the Kohen Midjan. And Eov was there. He was silent. He didn't say a word. So the Medrash says each one was rewarded and punished according to the way they acted. So Bilam said, kill the Jews. The Torah says, Bilam ben Beor, hargu b'charev. The Torah says, and Bilam got killed in battle. So he got killed. What happened to Yisro? He gave up a prominent position. He became the Kohen, the head of Midian, and his sons became descendants on the Sanhedrin. So I understand the Midah Keneged Midah, but Eov, what happened to Eov? He lived a life of pain and suffering. So the question is, what's the connection between keeping quiet? I understand Bilam said, kill the Jews. He was killed. Yisro gave up a position. He got one. But what's the... abstaining. Why is that so bad? I mean, it's not good, but...
Because all you need for evil to succeed is for goodness.
Excellent. See, it's Holocaust Education Week, so it's perfect timing. So they point out that why did Eov... Eov didn't speak up, not because... He didn't want to say. He knew they weren't going to listen to him anyway. But the point being is that I'll give an example like this. Let's say it happens to all of us. Maybe it happens in camp, at home. You're sitting there in the shower and someone turns on the cold water, all of a sudden it becomes boiling. You burn your back and you jump out of the shower. And you give a scream. So let me ask you, does the scream help the scar on your back? Of course not. But if it hurts, you scream. So if the other Jews are suffering, they're slaves in Egypt, and you don't do anything, you deserve the punishment. So that's what the same idea that they say, that in order for evil to succeed, good people merely have to do nothing. We don't have to, we don't have to go ahead and do something. So that's exactly, so Eov was around even during the time of Paro.
It's like that bystander law that they have in the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. If you see a criminal activity happening and you don't do anything,
Seinfeld, wasn't it?
I think they have that law in New York.
Oh, but that's still that if you don't do something, I guess
then you could be charged.
Yeah, I guess the question is then how much risk do you have to take to your own life?
Oh, no, not physical. But if you see something and you don't,
call up the police.
Yeah.
Oh, if you won't go and don't
read, you're a witness and you watch it, and then they come along, they say, why do you call? Oh,
okay.
The police?
It's
like, I couldn't be
bothered. Oh, you don't have to actively
right. You don't have to engage,
but you call 911. Well,
exactly.
Right. And then, is that actually ever enforced or not?
Yeah.
Oh, it has been, people.
It has been enforced.
Okay. That would be good if it was, it'd be surprising.
Think
yeah.
I think, what's his name, Giuliani.
Yeah.
Giuliani made it a law in New York.
Okay, yeah.
Daniel?
Right, then Daniel, again, the rabbis, the great assembly, were busy. Another book they wrote. Ezra and Nehemiah, written by Ezra and Nehemiah. Divrei Hayamim, it was a book of Chronicles, I guess they call it. Ezra and Nehemiah wrote that as well. Shira Shirim, they say, from Shlomo, but, you know, Ezekiel helped through the words of Shlomo.
The kings weren't writing.
Right. They're too busy doing other things. Rus, we know Shmuel Hanavi, Samuel, the same one who wrote Samuel.
It's time related. It's the same time, just before David.
Right. Echa, who wrote Echa, Lamentations, that's by Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu. Kehelas, again, by Shlomo and Chizkiyahu helped them. And Esther, again, by the rabbis of Great Assembly. But what I pointed out last week was, look, on one hand, Shmuel wrote Shmuel, and that made the book of prophets. But Shmuel also wrote Rus, and that's in the book of Ksuvim. So how come different, if this is the same author, how come it's in different books? So we explained either because, like Maimonides said, they didn't have the same level of prophecy. Moshe Rabbeinu made up the law, he instituted the laws of mourning or the laws of reading the Torah, but it's only rabbinic law. So not everything Moses did was biblical. So same thing here. When Samuel was on a higher level of prophecy, so his book made it into prophets. But when he got the prophecy for the other books of Rus, it was on a lower level, so it only made Ksuvim. Or, as others say, the Abar Benel, it has nothing to do with the level of prophecy. That was even that the book of prophecy is basically all about the prophecies, while the book of Ksuvim is more about talking about the wars, yichus, genealogy, in terms of who was who. So different, you know, different classifications in terms of what it was. So that's the 24 books. And then right on the bottom of the same page, the basics, it's called the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan is table, Aruch is set. Your table should be set. And that's basically the four books, the Jewish code of law that you know, comes from the oral of the Talmud, and it was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. He was the one who actually wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, he's the one who put it into print. We'll get into that more, but this there are four different categories of laws. So one is the daily life, Aruch Chaim, are the ways of life, meaning everyday life, and on the left deals with daily conduct, tefillah, davening, Shabbos, Yontif, right next to it. So maybe I think your page might be cut off. But it's basically, Aruch Chaim is the book of it's the laws of everyday life. You have the first two anyway. Then the other two are cut off. Yeridea deals with dietary laws, honoring parents. And then the other two you don't have are laws that deal with family matters and civil law. We'll come back to it since you don't have it. Right, so turn to the last page, the one that looks like this. So that's what we did. So the first one is Torah. So what is Torah Shebiksav? So that's what we just did. The Torah, the five books of the Torah, Nevi'im, the eight books of the prophets, and the 11 books of writing. That when you talk about the written law, those are the 24 books. That's all we have of the 24 books. Everything else we have is going to be the oral law. And that's what he says in the next line, Torah Shebal Peh. It says, the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. The six, that's the Mishnayis, the Mishnah, that's the bulk of the oral law. As we'll get into, but our tradition is, not only did God give Moses the Torah at Mount Sinai, the oral law, I mean the written law, but he also gave him the oral law. That's what we have in our Talmud and Mishnah. It's later on they put it into print. So for instance, Rav Shimshon Rafo Hirsch gives an example. Let's say you're sitting in a class and a teacher's giving a five-hour lecture. So if you know how to take notes, you're not going to be writing down every word. You'll write down a couple of lines, a couple of key messages, and then when you go over your notes, you'll remember the five-hour lecture. So that's what he explains. The written law, it's kind of like the notes. Basically, God's telling Moses, keep the Sabbath. Okay, but very good. What does that mean, keep the Sabbath? Keep kosher. It's very good, but if you don't tell me what it is, it's meaningless. So the oral law is explaining all these. So basically, the ring law is a closed book without the oral law, because we don't know what anything means. So we'll know the concept. Good, very good. I have to keep Shabbos. Okay, what does that mean? I'll play golf. Have to keep kosher. What's kosher? I got to put on tefillin in the morning. What? It's anything. You can't. And in fact, that's how. How do we know? Because how does the Torah begin? The first line in the Torah is Bereshis Bara Elokim, which means literally, the beginning created God. In other words, that someone else created God. I'm just reading what the words mean. Bereshis Bara Elokim. The beginning created God. That's heresy. We don't believe someone created God. Jewish belief is God. We don't know what it means. He always was, always there, always will be. So what does that mean? So we interpret it to mean that God created the world. But why write it in a way where it could be perceived that someone created God? What is the Rashi write on the first Rashi? Ein hamikrazu elo lidarshun. In other words, there are four levels of interpreting every verse in the Bible. It's known as orchard. In Hebrew, it's known as pardes. Pei, resh, dalet, samach. So pei means pshat, which means the literal. You open up a chumash right here, what you have. So there's the literal explanation of every pasuk that you have to know. Then secondly, resh, remez, allusion. It's not, you got to read in between the lines. It's not just what you're reading, that's true, but there's a deeper meaning. Then the third one is drush. It's like a drusha, like a sermon. It's a third level of interpreting the verse. And the fourth level, pardei samach sod, is secret, that's Kabbalah. I don't mean the Kabbalah like from Madonna, the made-up stuff. I mean the real deal. But so that's the four levels, the pardei. So if you were starting a Torah, if you're building a building, so you start with a foundation. You got to build the basics and you build up. If I was starting a Torah, I would have started a Torah which at least the first pasuk gives me a pshat, gives me a literal explanation. Once I get in the middle, it starts giving me deeper stuff. So why does the Torah begin with a pasuk that you can't even understand literally? So that's what Rashi says, that because especially when you come to the book of Bereshis, when it's all a bunch of stories, when you come to the book of Leviticus, you have all these intricate laws, you know, no one knows what's going on. It's hard to make up your own thing because you don't even know what the verses mean. But everyone has their own interpretations, and it's good to have your own opinions about what's going on in the book of Genesis or anything else. But what the rabbis are telling us, that in order to understand what's inside the book, you have to look to our Jewish tradition, and you have to look to the oral law to understand. And that's why you can't even begin, because if you just take me literally, you can't even read the first verse. And the same lesson is at the end. How does the Torah end? The Torah ends, talks about Moses' death, his obituary, and it says Vayom Hashem Moshe. Moshe died. That's the whole discussion. Who wrote the last eight verses, whether Moses or Yeshua? So how is it end? It talks about all his accomplishments. So what do we think of Moshe? His great, he took the Jews out of Egypt. He took them in the desert, Har Sinai, created the Red Sea, all this. So you figure the Torah is going to end on a high note. How does the Torah end? Moses breaking the Luchos. Moses breaking the tablets. What an anti-climax. Is that the way to end a good book? You want to end on a high note. Moses breaking the tablets? What kind of end? So it reminds me of an interesting story I like saying over with this. It was a comic strip I saw many years ago. I must have saw it in Israel because I remember it in Hebrew. And I don't usually speak Hebrew, so it goes like this. It was a case where the Ministry of Education was going. It could be New York, it could be Canada, this happens to be Israel. I'm not picking on Israel, it's true anywhere. The Ministry of Education was going into the schools to see what do the students know. They're checking out Melton, what are the kids learning? So this person walks into a school, I guess elementary school. He sees like a 10-year-old boy in the hallway. So he figures out to say, hi, Yanko, Yaakov, how you doing? And he asked him a question. He said, Yeled, child, Mishi Biares Haluchos. Child, who broke the tablets? So the kid gets like scared. He sees a stranger. He says, Lo ani, lo ani. I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Not me, not me.
Yeah, not me, not me. So the guy says, wow, I know, I heard they don't know anything in this school, but not to know that Moses broke the tablet. I'm going to the teacher. This is crazy. So he finds Chaim's teacher and he tells, you know what, I met him in the hallway and he asked him who broke the tablets and he said, Lo ani, lo ani, not me, not me. He says, you know, I know Yaakov very well. I know his family. He's a very honest boy. If he said he didn't break the tablet, it's one thing, the kids don't know anything, but the teachers don't know anything. So he runs to the principal's office. He says he's threatening to make a scandal. I'm going to put it in the papers. The principal's getting fed up with this guy. He says, just tell me how much they cost and I'll pay for them and just get out of here. So the point being is, so who broke the...
How much will it cost? The tablets.
It's, you know,
The principal didn't know either.
I guess that was before Apple came out with the tablets. Now they have a different meeting. But I think they just had the shloshim of Steve Jobs, wasn't it?
That's what your business is, what the tablet means.
Exactly. So either way, so why does it end with the, what kind of anti-climax is that ending?
It's not. It's very climactic. Yeah. It's the highest level.
Because it doesn't make it into the...
Why is it the highest level?
Because when he goes back to get the luchot is when he's elevated. We just talked about that.
Yes.
That's the end. That's the climactic.
On Yom Kippur, yes, exactly. Yes. So what happens, so what happens is... because
he's God.
Yeah, but there's another... But what happened was the Talmud tells us in Shabbos that Moshe came down and he sees the Jewish people looks like they're worshipping the idol. So he didn't, on his own, he didn't go ahead... He took the tablets and he broke them. He didn't get permission. He went ahead and did it. And then...
Because he was really angry.
He was angry. You know, he was angry, not a personal anger. He said, it's like he comes down, he's 40 days, 40 nights, not eating, not drinking. And he comes down, and, you know, so he gets upset, he breaks the tablets. And it's one of the things that God, that's what we get the custom when someone comes down, let's say from Shul, they get a Yasha Koach, it comes from here. Yasha Kochacha. Sheshi Barta. God said, I'm very proud of you. Good job, you broke the tablets. And a couple other... So what do the tablets represent? It's the power of the oral law. Because really what? The Torah is supposed to be given today. And Moses said, no, I'm not giving it. And God said, yeah, you're right, good idea. And that he introduced the power because we know that as we have a principle, the Torah isn't in heaven. You know, the prophets can't make up laws anymore. It's what we have. We have to go by what's in front of God. The Torah wasn't given to angels. It has to be something that people could keep. And therefore, the tablets represent the power of the oral law. That's why the same way the Torah begins with a verse that doesn't make any sense literally, you have to come unto the oral law. So too, that's how the Torah ends with the same concept. And that's why we have many examples in the middle. One more, it says in the sixth day of creation, it says, instead of saying the sixth day, Yom Shishi, it says Yom HaShishi, the sixth day. Why HaShishi? Why is this the only day which has an extra hay? So the rabbis tell us because when God created the world, he made a stipulation with the world. He said, if the Jewish people, 2,000 years later, accept the Bible on Mount Sinai, the world will be stay. If not, I'm destroying the world. I'm sending it back to null and void. So let me ask you something. Did the Jews accept the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan?
No.
The answer is no. Moses said, no way, we're going to do it. We're going to wait till tomorrow. He pushed it off a day. So how come we're here? So the answer is the Torah was given on the sixth day, but it's the oral law, that the ability that we're going to listen to the rabbis and to our Jewish... So that's the first step. That's the first lesson we have in when we begin the Torah... At the end, it's reinforced throughout that we have to go through. So it's easy when it comes to the book of Bereishis to think it's just a bunch of stories and you know, we can just say whatever we want. It's okay. You can have your own creativity. There's nothing wrong with having opinions on it. But as I point out, this isn't talk radio. When you call up to talk radio, your opinion, you probably know more than the person running the show. He doesn't know anything either. And I think this, you think, and it's all good. But when it comes to... Jewish tradition in terms of how to interpret different events. Again, everyone can have their own opinion. We will have, but not all opinions are equal. Imagine someone wants to give an opinion on Shakespeare or Hamlet. Oh, do you have a PhD? Oh, see, we didn't even want to hear what you... You have to earn an opinion. It's the same way in anything. So someone who's a Torah scholar, well-versed in it, and of course your opinion's going to hold more weight. Someone doesn't know anything from Judaism, they walk in and they read one verse in the Bible and they say this is what it means, so obviously he doesn't have too much credibility. It could be coincidentally right or not, but the point being is, obviously, not all opinions are equal, nor should they be. If someone's a worldwide chemist, and I say, well, I think it works that way, I don't know anything about chemistry, who cares what I have to say? Maybe I care, but no one else should care because I don't know what I'm talking about. The same
but
thing
everybody
with...
Everybody can learn.
Exactly, no, everyone can learn. It doesn't mean you can't have opinions, but you just have to, and you could say, you know, my opinion isn't based on what I know, but I think this is what it means. It doesn't mean you're wrong. But what I'm just saying is, you're saying we don't get the same credibility as someone who's actually been studying those years. But there is something for Torah. Every person has their own. Like each person has their own experiences, and the Torah is a living Torah, and we take our everyday examples and we incorporate into our own life. That's definitely true. So that's what the oral law is. It was given together with the written law, and the 24 books are written, and we go ahead and we do the 6 books, and then we have the 4 right here, the 4 category right under that, the 4 categories of the Jew, yeah, Arba, Tura, Meshulchan Aruch, the 4 categories of the code of Jewish law, so the 4 different categories. You see right here, over here, the 4 categories. Number one is Orech Chayim, which means living life, the daily things, prayer, Shabbos, Yontif, everyday life. That's what it deals with, all the laws of every day.
Kitzur
is a summary. The Kitzur is supposed to be, is in theory, well...
It's like the Coles notes.
Right, basically, yeah. Basically, it's a short, and it's written by someone much later. Yoredeya, those are the laws with dealing with kosher, not kosher, the laws of mourning and all of that stuff. Evin HaEzer, that's the 3rd character, that deals with all the, let's say, marriage, divorce, having children, all the women issues, and now family matters,
civil
not yeah,
but
yeah, family matters, and Choshen Mishpat, the last one. Right, and Choshen Mishpat deals with all business matters. It's just, you know, basically to be honest in business and all that. So those are the 4, there are 4 parts of the Code of Jewish Law. And of course, I always add that, and the perhaps the most important one is the 5th one. What do you mean the 5th one? I only see 4. The 5th one, as my Rebbeim used to teach me, is the 5th one is using seichel, common sense. If you don't have common sense, the other 4 aren't going to do you much good. In other words, as Mark Twain said quite cogently, unfortunately, common sense ain't too common. And the problem is you can't teach it either. So basically, a part of everything is you can have all the principles, but if you don't know how to apply anything, it's not going to get you too far. So of course, you need, in all these laws, you have to, obviously, you have to be knowledgeable. No, seichel by itself, common sense isn't going to get you far if you don't know anything. It will get you far on the street, having street smarts, but in terms of knowledge, you still have to have some basic knowledge, but you have to be able to think. Every human being has to have their own seichel and do, because you're not going to have anything in the shoulder taking you 24-7, holding your hand. There are going to be things where it's not going to be in there, and you either have to, depending, if, either find, you know, your rabbi, whoever, you know, or learn on your own, but it's things where you have to use your common sense. And the last thing we'll conclude on, and we'll continue next week, or maybe not next week, because what's next week? I'm the speaker, okay. So mitzvahs, there are 613 commandments. Contrary to popular belief, people think there are 10 commandments. There are 10, but 10 of 613. As we'll get into, the Hebrew really isn't 10 commandments, but we'll get to that next week. So how are they split up? There are positive commandments and negative commandments. How many positive? How many negative?
Positive
248. Very good. 200. You look on the sheet, you can be as smart as her.
What's the word say?
248. Yeah, mitzvahs asay. Very good. Keneged reish mem ches evarim. That's the numerical value of 248 in Hebrew. Evar. We have a tradition. there are 248 limbs in the body or different types of parts. Again, you know, doctors might say differently. It all depends on what you're defining a limb, what's the... But that's whatever that means exactly. But each one, let's say, sir, each commit there are two, right? There's 248 mitzvahs, and each one corresponds to a different. So Torah is the heart. If you want to have a heart, you need to. Each mitzvah represents a different part of your body. We don't know exactly which ones are which, but there are 248. And then the 365 mitzvahs go sase, 365 negative commandments, meaning the don'ts. Kineged, that's Shin Samache Gidin. The Ivarim are the limbs and bones, and these are more like the sinews, I guess. The 365, like the Gid Hanasha, like the Gidin, another different parts of the body. So 248 plus 365 gives us 613. So that's what we'll, we'll stop here. I'll take any questions, and then we'll continue on whenever we'll continue. I guess in 2 weeks, we'll continue on this finishing off the summary about the years, and we'll get into the seven universal laws, and then I'll get maybe at that time I'll actually get the curriculum. Any questions?
I heard once, and I can't remember where I heard it.